Hello, I'm Andy Burnham and welcome to Sparks. This week, we investigate radio harmony, take a look at the future of shortwave, we've got a new fuel-saving camshaft, the BBC plans a news radio network, we look at AM stereo, and an IEE report on electrophobia. As well as your letters, that's all to come this week on Sparks from Radiofax.
Tonight, I found it hard to say. She thought I'd had enough of her. Why can't she see? She's lovely to me, but I like to stay here and watch TV on my own. My girl's mad at me. Been on the telephone for an hour. We hardly said a word. I tried and tried, but I could not be heard. Why can't I explain? Why do I feel this pain? 'Cause everything I say, she doesn't understand. She doesn't realize.
From the IEE News, IEE report finds no grounds for electrophobia. There has been increasing concern over the last decade about the possible effects on health of man-made, low-level, low-frequency electric and magnetic fields. Public awareness has been heightened by a number of television programmes, books and magazine articles, which have often been sensationalist and which have led, particularly in the United States, to public alarm and widespread electrophobia, an irrational fear of electromagnetic fields. The IEEE SET Divisional Board, at the request of the Public Affairs Board, set up a small working party in May 1990 to consider the evidence currently available. Rather than duplicate the extensive reports and literature review produced by bodies such as the World Health Organization and the National Radiological Protection Board, the working party has attempted to summarize what it sees as the present state of knowledge in the three key areas of epidemiology, laboratory studies, and possible mechanisms of interaction. Its final report has just been published, and concludes that fears over possible health risks are greatly exaggerated and have little basis in fact. A vast body of literature already exists on the subject, with many more investigations in progress, and the working party studied the available evidence from epidemiological and laboratory studies. It's found that epidemiological studies to date suggest no more than a slight increase in the low risk of brain cancer and leukemia for workers in some electrical areas, and may be observing a correlation with some other occupational factor rather than exposure to electric or magnetic fields. If confirmed, these studies suggest an overall increase in cancer mortality for such occupations of approximately 0.5%. It has not yet been found possible to reproduce the results obtained from laboratory studies of the effects of low-level fields. And the report claims that none of the hypothetical mechanisms proposed in the literature can be regarded as proven by experiment. The report concludes that, in the light of current scientific knowledge, there is no apparent reason for dissent from the conclusions and advice given in the guidance document of the National Radiological Protection Board. This basically recommends exposure standards that avoid known physiological and thermal effects due to induced currents, and states that the board agrees with the conclusions of the International Non-Ionizing Radiation Committee that there is at present insufficient biological and epidemiological data to make a health risk assessment, or even to determine whether there is a potential hazard to health with regard to athermal effects of electromagnetic fields. Well, you can get a copy of that report from the IEEE called Biological Effects of Low-Frequency Electromagnetic Fields, and it's published at £5, available from the IEEE, P.O. Box 6, Stevenage, Hertfordshire, SG1 2 SD. That from IEEE News.
A letter now from Dave Smith, who lives in Llandudred Wells, Powys in Wales. I enclose my log of clandestine stations for September 91. All of the old stages are there, but first are one or two new ones. Radio Harmony was the real surprise, first picked up at 10:25 UTC on the 14th of September with a massive signal and excellent quality of modulation, if not of music. At least they're trying to do something different and sound like a professional operation. More about Radio Harmony, of course, in a minute. Other newcomers included Radio Anorak, Radio Pamela, Weekend Music Radio, European Pirate Radio, and Radio Mutiny International. QSLs confirmed this month included Radio Mi Amigo and Radio Stella International. You may be interested to know that Radiofax was mentioned on HCJB's musical mailbag on Saturday the 28th. As you know, that station often uses 6205 kHz during the winter months. When this was mentioned live on air, during a phone-in, at least one caller from England phoned in to say that the frequency was already used by yourselves. Rich McVicker, who hosts HCJB's DX programme, already knew this and said they were looking for an alternative. In the past, they've used 6130 kHz, so keep your fingers crossed. Well, there we are. Thanks, Dave Smith. And here's a 48-metre band list from Tom Reed, who lives in Gosforth in Newcastle. 6205, Radiofax, of course. 6210, Radio Mutiny International, also heard on 6218. 6220, Radio Zenith International. 6229, Jolly Roger Radio. Also Southern Music Radio, Radio London, and Radio Europe via Jolly Roger Radio. 6230, Britain Radio International. 6240, Radio Merlin, who are rumoured to be coming back soon. 6240, Weekend Music Radio. 6255, Radio Confusion. 6262, Northern Ireland Relay Service, carrying Riverside 101 and European Pirate Radio. 6275 West and North Kent Radio. 6276 Radio Delta Elburg. 6280 Ozone Radio. 6285 Radio East Coast Holland. 6290 Radio Orion. 6293 Radio Stella International. 6300 Radio Confusion. And 6305 Radio Harmony. 6524 Radio Pamela on shortwave, and 6538 Station Sierra Sierra and Radio Stella. Our friends on 7446 kHz. If you'd like to write to us, we'd love to have your letter. As always, the address is Sparks, Radio Fax, The Forge, Cranley, England, GU67BG. I guarantee to read your letter out on air. And if you'd like a reply in writing, which includes a station card, technical information and an artist's impression of the transmitter site, please send 50 pence, 3 international reply coupons or $1. And the address again, Sparks, Radio Fax, The Forge, Cranley, England, GU67BG.
If you're considering buying one of the Philips DC777 shortwave car radios from Radiofax Sales, here's some very good news for you. After some hard bargaining with our suppliers, we're now able to offer these terrific shortwave car radios at the new lower price of only £239. And remember, not only is the DC777 a good quality digital readout shortwave tuner, it also has long wave, medium wave, FM stereo, a high quality stereo cassette deck and powerful stereo amplifier, all in a compact, standard size in-car unit. Shortwave coverage is from 3170 to 21910 kHz continuous. This unit receives a good review in the World Radio and TV Handbook and 4 stars in the Radio Netherlands receiver shopping list. The new low price, remember, is only £239, inclusive of VAT and delivery in the UK or overseas airmail to anywhere in the world. There's no long wait for your unit to arrive. We hold them in stock. Contact our sales office for more information and a brochure. Telephone number is in England, 0483 275 997. Fax number is also in England, 0483 276 477. Or write to us at Radio Fax, The Forge, Cranley, GU6 7BG in England.
I'm
The World of Shortwave, a special report by James Careless in Radio World. World Band Radio, it's an Alice in Wonderland medium, a place where most domestic broadcasting rules do not apply, and those few that do tend to work in reverse. Consider that receiver sales in the United States have jumped dramatically, but the overall world audience is still shrinking. Government and public stations are on top, while commercial rock stations cannot obtain a foothold. And, finally, some world band broadcasters believe the only way they will survive in the future is to get out of the world bands. Technically, the world bands are the shortwave bands that cover 13 sections of the radio spectrum ranging from 3.9 to 26.1 MHz. This is why many people use the terms shortwave and world band interchangeably. In terms of content, the world bands are home to five different broadcasters. First, there are publicly owned stations such as the BBC and Radio Netherlands. Then there are government-run stations, such as the Voice of America and Radio Moscow. Between them, these two groups own the lion's share of the world band audience. Next, there are religion-operated broadcasters, such as Heralding Christ Jesus' Blessing, HCJB in Ecuador, and the World Service of the Christian Science Monitor. The list further includes domestic-style commercial stations like WRNO New Orleans, Louisiana. And finally, there are the illegal amateur-run pirate stations, operating under such names as Voice of Anarchy, He-Man Radio, and Zerk with an X. All operate in a broadcast medium entirely reliant on the reflective qualities of the ionosphere. At best, these change from hour to hour, making daily frequency changes a must. At worst, they do not work at all, due to occasional geomagnetic disturbances originating at the sun. According to BBC research, whose accuracy is widely accepted by other world band broadcasters, nearly 200 million people tune into world band radio at least once each week. As it turns out, the BBC has the largest audience of 120 million people, followed by the Voice of America, and then the combined audience of Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty. And why do people tune in? Traditionally, the first reason that people listen to shortwave radio around the world is for news, said Sherwood Demitz, head of the communication research at the US Information Agency, the parent of VOA. Added Jonathan Marks, editor of Radio Netherlands Media Network, shortwave radio is very much crisis-driven. 1991 has been a year of crisis, and world band receiver sales have been booming, so said Jock Elliott, contributing editor to the Passport to World Band Radio, an annual directory that the New York Times called a TV guide for world band radios. As well, the new generation of digitally tuned radios are as easy to operate as a telephone. And unlike their huge tube-filled predecessors, that's valve in English, these sets are small, powerful, and reasonably priced. Yet, as good as this news would seem to be, world band broadcasters will tell you their market shares are dwindling. Why? It's due to that pesky freedom that's sweeping the world. Kim Andrew Elliott said, the audience research officer at the VOA. Wherever you have that, the audience for international broadcasting declines. As well, the growth of other media such as television in areas like India are also starting to cut into the time that was formerly used to listen to shortwave. But what about the sales growth in the United States? The audience is estimated to be just 2% of the population, of which some 194 million 12 years of age or older listen to commercial radio each week. So, although the growth is real, its actual impact is relatively small. There are more strange features to world band radio, at least strange to those accustomed to domestic broadcasting. First, public and government stations, with their emphasis on talk, beat commercial rock outlets hands down. In fact, there is only one such station left in operation. That is WRNO New Orleans. Others that have gone off the air, which means they were sold to religious organizations, eager to spread the word at their own expense include KUSW Salt Lake City, which broadcast the music that drove Manuel Noriega crazy when he was holed up at the Vatican Embassy in Panama. Those American-owned rock stations have not had an easy time for two reasons. First, as noted before, world band listeners want news, not music. Secondly, when it comes to sound quality, even domestic AM sounds better. The final irony of world band is that many of its major players believe the future lies elsewhere, mainly on someone else's domestic station. The reason is simple, according to Jonathan Marks. Audiences that relied on world band in the past, such as those in Eastern Europe, are tuning into increasingly reliable outlets at home. So the stations are going to have to wake up to the fact of, so how are we going to keep them? Do we say goodbye, or do we change our programming, or do we change our method of distribution? Distribution seems to be the most popular answer, whether by taped recordings or increasingly by direct satellite relays, as offered by the BBC. All this begs a question. Will world band survive into the next century? Marx said he believes so, with certain qualifications. Shortwave will certainly survive to Africa and to Asia as an important broadcasting medium for a long time, he said. But I think that if shortwave stations stick to shortwave as their only means of distribution, then they're probably going to fade into the distance. So not an altogether optimistic outlook from Radio World.
The streets are lined with camera crews. Everywhere he goes is news. Today is different. Today is not the same. Today I'll make the action. Take snapshot into the light. Snapshot into the light. I'm shooting into the light. 4 miles down, the cavalcade moves on. Driving into the sun. If I worked it out right, you won't see me or the gun. 2 miles to go, they're clearing the road. And the cheering has really begun. I've got my radio, I can hear what's going on.
Time viewing, glow in a flash as I
hiding behind the front door. Friends have all gone home. There's my toy gun on the floor. Come back, Mom and Dad. You're growing apart. You know that I'm growing up sad. I need some attention. I shoot into the light.
Radio Harmony hits the headlines. This was on Media Network.
Meanwhile, David Ward in Norwich, England, solved a mystery surrounding Radio Harmony. For several weeks, a station playing music of the 60s and 70s has been operating for several hours a day on 6305 kHz. When it first came on the air, it called itself Radio Harmony and gave a box address in Texas. Then nothing but continuous music went out for a while, until this past Tuesday night, when what sounded like a regular program commenced. This time, though, the contact address was given as P.O. Box 1651 in Frinton-on-Sea, Essex. There were also two phone numbers mentioned on the air. These numbers sound familiar. In fact, my phone book shows they're the same as East Anglian Productions. EAP have been involved in offshore broadcasting for decades, at first marketing records of Radio Caroline, later having a heavy financial interest in Laser 558. Signals from Radio Harmony, though, are believed to come from Ireland, but it's not a competitive signal in this part of Europe at least, and in the early mornings it mixes with the Cuban clandestine radio station La Voz del Cid.
Well, that was Jonathan Marks there on Media Network from Radio Netherlands.
Here's a letter from Peter Evans, who writes from Mitchelden in Gloucestershire. I've been meaning to write to you for quite some time to tell you it's nice to have Radio Facts back on the air again. I'm not sure how you managed to get around the Broadcasting Act, which closed so many stations back in the end of 1988, but I'm pleased you've found a loophole in the law of Ireland. Of course, there have been stations which remained since then. Jolly Roger Radio and Ozone Radio, formerly West Side Radio on shortwave, and I believe Radio Dublin is still on. I remember your close down back at the end of 1988 and still have a tape of it in my collection, plus some recordings of Radio Carousel's closure, which went on 6240 kHz if my memory serves me right. I used to enjoy Heady Eddie's programmes on Radio Rainbow, 6240 kHz. Your transmission on 6205 kHz is usually very clear. Sparks is a very interesting programme. I enjoy the rock programmes that go out Fridays and Saturdays, but I also enjoy the recordings of offshore radio from the past, which have gone out on Fridays and Saturdays. I was a fan of RNI, and enjoy hearing recordings from that time. RNI was the first offshore radio that I heard myself, although I was aware that in the 1960s others had broadcast from boats. But I enjoy listening to tapes of offshore stations from all eras. Paul Bentley's lively presentation on Wednesdays and Thursdays and Sundays makes for interesting programmes. I have a tape from Anorax UK which has segments of recordings from the close downs of the Irish stations back in 1988. And on a recording of a station called WABC is a voice that sounds remarkably like Paul's. Has he spent some time in Ireland on this station? Well, the answer is yes. In fact, he was the programme controller there. I used to be able to hear Sunshine Radio on 531 kHz and Radio Nova on 738 kHz with the aid of a medium wave loop, but I never heard WABC, which followed the Laser Hot Hits format according to the tape I've got. I originally built the loop to get help with reception of Caroline, but quickly discovered many other stations to hear also. Going back a few years, when Caroline was on 963 kHz, daytime reception was not very good with a simple portable radio, due to Radio Wyvern on 954 kHz in Herefordshire, which I live 2 miles away from. The loop aerial helped to null out Wyvern. If you have any of the recordings left from when you used to broadcast back in 1988, possibly you could air them again as a Radiofax archive feature. We're thinking about that idea. I particularly remember a feature looking at the land-based stations in the UK, and remember an interview with the staff of Sunshine Radio Ludlow, who used to broadcast on 1017 kHz medium wave. The people behind that have not broadcast for a long time as Sunshine, but on 1512 kHz AM is a station testing aerial propagation, which is licensed by the old licensing authority, and this has the same address as Sunshine Radio used to use. Sunshine Radio pushed ILR Wyvern quite hard and did well on advertising prior to its closure from 7 days a week station. Wyvern bosses did not like Sunshine because its transmissions covered Herefordshire and Worcestershire from Shropshire. This was prior to Beacon Radio starting to operate from Shropshire as well as from Wolverhampton. Now WABC, I believe. I now use a SciShow SW5000 receiver with an ATU and a 40-foot long aerial. This pulls in many stations from all over the world, and compared with some systems is quite an inexpensive setup. Sometime in the future I would like to get something with a synchronous detection, possibly a Sony 2010. I'm not convinced, however, on whether music would sound okay with this mode of operation. Using the BFO on my current receiver, music still sounds slightly distorted, although speech can be demodulated quite well on single sideband. There's nothing worse than trying to listen to a rock track and hear it distorting by listening on sideband, and I wonder how this would affect stations like yours if you had to change the sideband, which seems better suited to speech than music output. Well, Trevor says in a notice, if it's properly synchronized and stays locked, you won't get the pitch shift that you get with a free-running BFO. However, we have no plans to go onto sideband, and we're rather dubious about whether broadcasters should be changing to sideband anyway, as you may have heard from Trevor's report a few weeks ago. Back to the letter from Paul Evans. I'm 35 years old, and radio has always been important to me. I started serious shortwave listening back in 1984 and have been hooked ever since. I'm a centre lathe operator at a factory in the Doughty Group, which makes components for aircraft. At the moment things are uncertain due to defence cuts, although we have civil work to do as well, for Airbus Industries through British Aerospace. So a feature you reported on earlier in the year about a possible problem with Airbus was of great interest to me. Doughty Aerospace make undercarriages and hydraulic equipment for military and civil aircraft. In fact, George Doughty, the founder of the Doughty Group who died around 5 years ago, had the original idea for the hydraulic undercarriage prior to the Second World War and formed his own company in Cheltenham, Gloucestershire, after working for the Gloucestershire Aircraft Company. Doughty has expanded out into all sorts of enterprises since. Anyway, that's enough for this time. To keep up the good work and enjoyable programmes. Excellent letter from Peter Evans. Thanks very much.
Wavering on the News Wave Bands. From The Observer by Richard Brooks. The BBC's planned all-news radio network will not now start until autumn next year at the earliest. In typical BBC fashion, there are now four committees looking at the proposed network. Initially, it seemed a reasonably simple task. Come up with another £6 million a year, put the new network onto Longwave, while the traditional Radio 4 goes out only on FM. Programmes such as Today and PM would be broadcast simultaneously on both wave bands. One snag is the wave band, as the young 25 to 45 year old target audience tends to listen on FM. But Radio 4 purists argue that dramas and such like must go on FM because of its better sound. Another problem is cost. £12 million is a more realistic figure for the changes. Rather late in the day, the BBC is wondering whether it first needs a thorough review of all radio networks. Only then can decisions about a radio news channel be made. Is Radio 5 worth continuing? Its only success has been its sports coverage. Radio 2 has managed both to lose and confuse its audience. Its future is in doubt. Radio 3 needs redefining since competition is coming soon from the first commercial classical music station, Classic FM. Another key factor is the government, which will not be happy for the BBC to have a news station as a sixth network. Tory voices are already hoarse from complaining about anti-government bias in the BBC's current output. That piece by Richard Brooks in The Observer. Years of Radio Jackie. This LP record traces the story from early operations in fields through High Street Studios to the final close down.
Police with tracker dogs and post office detection men raided a pirate radio station in South London yesterday. Radio Jackie, which was said to broadcast for 6 hours every Sunday afternoon, was manned by about 15...
On March the 7th, 1972, Radio Jackie made parliamentary history when a tape of the station was played to a committee of the House of Commons during a debate on the Sound Broadcasting Bill. This tape, the first ever to be played in the House, was used to illustrate how commercial radio could sound if it were legalized in Great Britain.
Radio Jackie.
Jackie. Jackie.
The station that fits snugly into your ear.
Radio Jackie. The sound of Southwest London. Radio Jackie. The sound of Southwest London.
This is Channel 4.
A new crackdown on pirate radio by the Independent Broadcasting Authority. But is the IBA acting in the public interest?
This is Angela Rumbold, Member of Parliament for Mitcham and Morden. As many of you will know who are regular listeners to Radio Jackie, the government has introduced legislation recently which may put Radio Jackie's future at jeopardy.
From the vessel of suburbia to the rolling Surrey Downs.
From houseboats on the River Thames to office blocks in town.
Close enough to really care as Britain should always be. London's favourite station, Radio Jackie.
In the last 16 years, I mean, Radio Jackie's done nothing but good, and the events leading to its closure are monstrous.
These fascinating recordings, with a booklet of photographs all about Radio Jackie, are yours for £6. For Europe, it's £8. And with airmail to the rest of the world, £10. Order your copy now from Radio Jackie, 120 London Road, Morden, England, SM4 5AT.
You're listening to Sparks on Radio Facts. Every Monday and Tuesday, our weekly programme of technical, media and science news. This week presented by Andy Burnham and Trevor Brook.
From Radio World, a piece about AM broadcasting in Europe by Lawrence Hallett. AM stereo broadcasting is an accepted practice in many parts of the world, but European broadcasters showed little or no interest until recently. Since 1989, commercial broadcasters, notably in the UK and the Republic of Ireland, have started examining AM stereo as a way of improving the perceived quality of medium wave. But Germany and France appear more reserved, preferring to keep their options open for the introduction of more data services or the launch of an as yet undefined AM radio data system standard. Commercial broadcasters, including some in France, however, would prefer to have AM stereo now because it is a proven system that has obvious marketing advantages. Conversely, AM/RDS is not developed and could be 10 years or more away from commercial introduction. The de facto AM stereo transmission standard worldwide is CQAM. But European broadcasters generally believe that receiver availability is of paramount importance when launching AM stereo. Japan, the major receiver producer for the European market, has just accepted CQAM as its domestic standard and appears poised to support its introduction in Europe when and if this occurs. CQAM AM includes a stereo component and the traditional monophonic AM component that consists of the carrier frequency and amplitude-modulated sidebands. A common technique for getting more information out of a fixed bandwidth is to implement a second carrier on the same frequency but 90 degrees out of phase or in quadrature with the original. CQAM utilizes the second carrier to convey the stereo information. There is a potential compatibility problem with AM stereo because there are other uses for a quadrature carrier, such as data or AM/RDS. Some long-wave transmitters already carry data for remote industrial control and switching. In order to make CQAM compatible with existing AM radios, the left and right channel information is matrixed. The left plus right information amplitude modulates the normal AM carrier, and the left minus right information modulates the quadrature carrier. If most existing mono AM radios did not use an envelope detector that picks up the additional information as distortion, simple matrixing the two carriers would provide excellent AM stereo. Introducing stereo in quadrature adds very little extra noise, unlike FM stereo, and occupies essentially the same bandwidth. But backwards compatibility is the key to future acceptance of the new standard. AM stereo had to be compatible with existing mono receivers. The Motorola system adjusts the envelope amplitude to ensure that stereo transmission is not seen by envelope detectors as distortion. This is accomplished by multiplying the signal by a constant during transmission, and then reversing this operation in the receiver. The result is a high-quality AM stereo system. The system is easy to implement at the transmitter site and in receivers. It is also spectrally efficient and will not affect existing mono radios. European broadcasters have some difficulties that do not arise in many other parts of the world. Unlike in the United States, medium wave band channels are 9 kHz, not 10 kHz apart. Additionally, because of spectrum crowding, modulation is severely restricted, with filters rolling off at frequencies just below 5 kHz. The filters are used to ensure that sidebands are at least 40 dB down by 9 kHz away from the carrier frequency. If they are used in conjunction with stereo transmissions, the apparent separation performance is not as impressive. However, in practice, there is no reason why sharper filters, such as those used in the Orban Optimod processor, cannot be used to achieve the required minus 40 dB at 9 kHz removed from the carrier without beginning to roll off frequencies until 6 kHz. This makes all the difference, and stereo performance becomes not unlike that of FM. Obviously, high frequency response is not as good, but separation levels of between 35 and 40 dB are easily achieved. In fact, AM stereo in some cases can be more satisfactory than FM. In particular, car listening benefits from less dynamic range, no multipath distortion, and no extra noise caused by the presence of stereo information. It may seem exaggerated that the extra 1 kHz of sideband information can cause such improvements. In fact, the measure of AM stereo performance is more critically determined in the receiver design. Measurements on a variety of mono AM radios has shown that frequency response most often begins to roll off at around 2.5 kHz, with some more expensive or older designs as high as 4.5 kHz. CQAM receivers begin by using a low-distortion synchronous detector, which is vastly superior to the traditional envelope detector. The Motorola chips are in their third generation, with adaptive bandwidth and variable notch filters to remove the worst effects of adjacent channel interference. These features, coupled with a full 6 kHz frequency response, provide AM reception remarkably better than that achieved by most conventional designs. Now that Japan appears set for full-scale CQAM receiver manufacture, Europe has perhaps its last chance to upgrade the quality of service provided to AM listeners. In the UK, commercial broadcasters are anxious to see introduction go ahead quickly, since the general feeling is that with the introduction of digital audio broadcasting coming nearer, there is only a matter of time before the focus for AM changes. That piece about AM on medium wave by Lawrence Hallett in Radio World.
Something to look out for in your local large newsagent, such as WH Smith, is the new issue of Radioactive magazine. And in that, you will find an article about our good selves. Keith Townsend reporting from Radiofax. I'll just read out the last paragraph. There can be little argument that the UK licensing authorities, in common with those of a number of other countries, will have to look seriously in the whole subject of independent broadcasting in the near future, if it is not to be once more overtaken by events. We appreciate the oft-repeated view that the spectrum is a finite resource with heavy demands being made on it, and that, especially so far as signals in the HF bands are concerned, the needs and aspirations of other countries have to be taken into account. Nevertheless, radio technology has advanced at such a pace over the past few years that what was considered totally impractical just a few short years ago is now regarded as commonplace. We need no better example than the frequency bands up around 900 MHz. It is not so long ago that their use was being rejected as expensive and unreliable by almost everyone to whom they were offered. Now the world and his dog wants a slice of the action. Modern techniques are enabling radio services to be operated in even closer proximity, without mutual disruption. Surely it is not beyond the wit of mankind to overcome the present difficulties which have been given rise to the current wave of unlicensed broadcasting. And he invites your comments. Keith Townsend writing about radio facts in the November issue of Radioactive magazine. And also dropping onto our doorstep, autumn 1991 edition of the Free Radio Quarterly. It's a brand new magazine, the first issue. And if you're interested in subscribing, a bargain, really every issue will be £1.50. The address to write to is P.O. Box 112, Crewe in Cheshire, CW27DS. Thanks to Adrian Cook, the editor, for sending that down to us. I'll repeat the address to subscribe to Free Radio Quarterly, which looks like a good read. It's P.O. Box 112, Crewe, Cheshire, CW27DS. In this issue, there's Keep This Frequency Clear, which in why some broadcasters still believe they have a divine right to transmit, a profile of Britain Radio, their listings of free radio on shortwave, and there's a nice little circuit for a 4-watt 6 MHz AM transmitter to build yourself. So that's all in the first issue of Free Radio Quarterly.
Just
Available now, a brand new Radio Caroline CD called The Legend Lives On. The CD contains 44 tracks taking you through some of the great events of Radio Caroline from the first broadcasts in 1964 with Simon D, test transmissions from Caroline North with Daffy Don Allen, Tony Prince in 1966, other great names like Robbie Dale, Crispian St. John, Andy Archer and Peter Chicago. One track features the female DJs through the 80s, and you'll hear too memorable Caroline commercials and jingles, and about the collapse of the highest shipborne aerial mast anywhere in the world in 1987, plus shortwave test transmissions in 89 and the raid in that year on the Ross Revenge. All this is just a tiny fraction of what you'll hear on The Legend Lives On, a new 44-track CD available at £9.99 inclusive, only from these sources. SMC, P.O. Box 53121 at 1007 RC, Amsterdam in the Netherlands, and from Chris Edwards, P.O. Box 1514, London W72LL in England. Radio Caroline, the legend lives on.
In Electronics Weekly, 7 out of 10 people support increased taxation to pay for science and research spending, according to a poll carried out for the Association of University Teachers. A tiny 22% of the 1,000-plus people questioned thought that the current government spent enough on science research. Those feelings became higher still up the socio-economic scale. 5 out of 6 in the A-B group thought the government penny-pinched on science spending. All social groups thought spending on education was vital to economic recovery. Diana Warwick, General Secretary of the AUT, said, "We have long said that science is suffering, that standards and quality depend on investment. This evidence shows we cannot be written off as a self-interest group." And here's a letter from Dirk Nehring, who writes from Stuttgart in Germany. "I had listened for several times on 6205 kHz, but now I think reception is better on 12255 during the day. Thanks for your report, Dirk Nehring."
Quiet, quiet heart. target, my aim is straight. So you're in love, I say what of it? Things can change, there's always changes, and I wanna try. If you lose that pilot, I can fly your plane. If you want solid ground, come on and try me. Oh, I can take you so high.
You're listening to Sparks on Radio Facts on 6205 and 12255, presented this week by Andy Burnham and Trevor Brook. Fresh Radio Facts programmes start on Monday, Wednesday, Friday and Sunday. And our address, if you'd like to write to us, is Sparks, Radio Facts, The Forge, Cranley, England, GU6 7BG. If you'd like a reply to your letter, which includes a station card, technical information, and an artist's impression of the transmitter site, please send 50 pence, 3 international reply coupons, or $1 to Sparks, Radio Facts, The Forge, Cranley, England, GU6 7BG. I look forward to receiving your letter and reading it out on the programme.